Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is, as you know, if you've been listening, right near Philadelphia. And when I started this podcast at the beginning of 2019, actually end of 2018, I was hoping to get a cool diversity of locations, some different perspectives on running for office, talked with people in my local area, my council member, people who are running for mayor and prothonotary and county commissioner in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. And now I've been able to expand to more states. And I'm really excited today because my friend Nathan Schrader has connected me with Shonda Yates, who recently ran for office and was successful in the great state of Mississippi. So we're going to be talking about her campaign, what motivated her to get involved, and hopefully you'll listen and consider running for office yourself. So Shonda, thank you for joining the podcast.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, I was reading your profile. What has made you really engage when it comes to the political process?
Sure. To be completely honest with you, running for political office or being actively engaged in politics was never on my radar. I was asked to run for this particular seat, House of Representatives seat for a district here in Mississippi, about 2 weeks before the qualifying deadline.
Wow.
And, yeah, I initially laughed and said, I'm pretty sure you have the wrong number. I don't think you meant to call me. But, you know, I talked to the person who was on the other line, and then two other people reached out to me in the same time frame, also making the ask for me to run. So my husband and I talked about it, and I was skeptical, honestly, because I'm sort of an OCD, very much type A, I love a plan in place kind of person, and this is not something that I had a plan for. I didn't have a roadmap for it. We had not started networking to do this. We did not fundraise for this. We are both attorneys. We practice together and own our own law firm. We also have a four-year-old, so there's a lot of moving parts and pieces that I had not thought through, and I had 2 weeks to make that decision and figure those things out. But at the end of the day, I decided yes, that I would say yes to this. I would sort of jump off that cliff and go for it, because we had made an active decision to have our business here in Jackson and to raise our four-year-old son here in Jackson, to build a brand-new house here in Jackson just 5 years ago. And I had been asking and talking about change that I wanted to see on Facebook and with friends, but I realized if I was going to continue to ask for change in my area, I had to be willing to be an active part of the solutions that I was wanting to see. So I said yes, I turned in my qualifying papers, and we sort of hit the ground running and ran a very long 7-8 month long campaign just to build up name recognition and those sorts of things. But yeah, we won. I unseated a 32-year incumbent who'd had the seat since 1988. And this was my first time to ever run for office. And I'm the first woman to ever hold the seat, the first Democrat to hold this seat in several generations, I think 6 generations. So it can definitely be done. You don't have to have a long-term plan to make it happen. You just have to be committed to doing it throughout the whole process.
Well, hopefully that's going to get some people who are afraid of running to do it. But so you mentioned your qualifying papers. What do you need to do to become a candidate for your race in Mississippi? Because the rules are probably different in different places.
Sure. So it's very straightforward here. There is a filing fee, essentially, that you have to turn in. I think it was $200. And I think that fee varies depending on which race you are. If you're a statewide candidate, the fee's more. If you're smaller than a district, it's less than that. And then you have to live within the district for so many years and have to have been a citizen or a resident of Mississippi for so many years. But that 4 years is the bottom baseline requirement, so it's not anything cumbersome.
And do you have to, for me, running for local office, I have to get a few signatures to get on the ballot. Did you have to get petitions to get on the ballot then for officially?
No.
Well, that's nice.
Signatures required.
That makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So you got on the ballot, but, and you had not been overly political, but you voted, you paid attention, of course, like you said.
Sure, yeah, you know, I think with, like most people do, and just sort of passively engaged, if that makes sense, but with no ambitions to actually run for office or to sort of spotlight myself, quite honestly, because there is a sort of, you know, you sort of put your life and yourself on display when you decide to run for public office. That is not something that I'd ever anticipated doing.
And we've seen in national politics and statewide things that it can be very intimidating for women to put themselves out there. They're judged in ways that men aren't. I can wear the same pair of pants every day for work and probably no one would even notice.
Right.
So you went into this, one, knowing it was a daunting challenge because it's an incumbent, being a Democrat in a race that, in a district that hadn't voted for a Democrat in years, and also knowing you probably would be in the minority when you won, and knowing that there are very few women in the legislature in Mississippi. So,
yes, very few.
What was it that kept you from being like, nope, 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 not going to do that?
So, none of it was, I guess I've been a woman in a man's world for pretty much my whole life. I was raised most of my childhood by a single father, so it was me, my dad, my brother, my whole life for the most part. And then as an attorney in Mississippi, my very first job here was working for a law firm where there were no female partners. So I was sort of constantly around men in that aspect. And even jobs, I've worked since I was 15, and most of those jobs have been in male-dominated areas and offices where men are running them. Women may have clerical positions and things like that, but they aren't the boss. They're not the one in charge. So that part of it to me was not super daunting. I also have professional relationships with several of the men who are in the legislature now. There are a lot of attorneys that are in the legislature. So as an attorney, I've dealt with them, talked to them. They may not agree on everything, but we at least have a professional relationship and generally know how to speak to each other in a professional, courteous way. But for me, the hang-up was more so the idea of juggling, maintaining an active law practice, being the managing partner of this, so I also handle all of the HR components, payroll, hiring, firing, all of those things in addition to actual practice of law, and being the mother of a four-year-old, and I like to be very active in, you know, the school events and those sorts of things. So that was the main hang-up for me was, okay, can I really juggle all of these things? And I was able to do that pretty successfully during campaigning. My husband was great, so that helped a lot, having his support. And campaigning, I really would like to think that was much busier than actually being in the legislature would be. We were campaigning, you know, every day of the week for multiple hours. We knocked probably 10,000 doors by the end of election night. So it was just a very active, time-consuming thing. And I feel like if I was able to juggle all of that, then actually serving in the legislature will actually feel like a bit of a break.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I've heard that from multiple people that you put in, especially depending on your state, when it's not a full-time legislature, you're putting in more time campaigning and going to other public events. So you, like you said, you were in a district where the incumbent had been there for a long time and hadn't voted for a Democrat. What was it like door knocking for yourself? Was that, obviously you've never done that before.
In the beginning, it was sort of surreal. I had never knocked a door for a political candidate my entire life. So the first time I knocked a door for a candidate, I was knocking for myself.
Right.
And so that was a little, you know, it took two or three doors to sort of say, okay, this is not a big deal. But I'm an attorney. I talk to people all day, every day. So that part really was not challenging. My husband and I both actually ended up really enjoying door knocking. We got to have conversations with people that we might have never otherwise met in parts of our district that we had never been in, quite frankly. And it was a rewarding experience. So election night, I told my husband and several other people, you know, regardless of what the numbers end up being tonight, I've learned a lot about myself and I've learned a lot about my district and my city and just in general. And so it was a win for me regardless of what the numbers ended up being.
And in my brief experience in Mississippi, having gone to one wedding over a weekend there. I imagine that while the demographics, political demographics may be intimidating, people were generally, hopefully they were friendly.
Yes. I would say my husband had one lady who was very rude.
Well, at least they were rude to him.
I didn't have anyone that was rude. Everybody, even if they acknowledged that our political ideologies did not line up, most people by and large were still willing to stand there and have a conversation and say, okay, well, yeah, I agree with you on this, or no, I'm just never going to vote for a Democrat no matter what, but it was very nice to meet you kind of conversation. I did have one man answer the door naked. That was the strangest thing that happened during canvassing. But everybody was very nice.
Yeah, well, hopefully that doesn't happen to everyone, and hopefully that doesn't happen in the legislature, though we've seen some people in elected office that seem to not handle themselves appropriately.
Correct, yes. That is definitely a true statement.
So, I looked up what you were doing when you were running, and you and others running in Mississippi, including the Democratic candidate for governor, were making education the top priority, right?
Yes, that is hands down. Education and infrastructure are the two things that we are failing miserably at, and it impacts our failures in other areas as well.
So, yeah, so explain, because I'm sure you know the reputation that Mississippi has in, well, most of the country. They look at the statistics, and they'll say Mississippi's 49th or 50th in education in particular. Though you have some great universities there and good people, what's the perception like in Mississippi itself? Obviously, it resonated with your campaign.
So in my district specifically, it's interesting because it is an area where you have a lot of the wealth concentrated within the city of Jackson. It's probably... It is the wealthiest district in the city of Jackson. So within that, you have everything from sort of lower middle class, who are definitely sending their kids to public school, to very, like, sort of the wealthiest of the wealthy who would never dream of sending their kids to public school and, you know, are fourth, fifth, sixth generation private school attendees. And so the conversation is a little different depending on exactly where you are within my district. So I think it's a good example of how the state as a whole would be. But what I found during campaigning over the last several months is if people had their kids in public school, they obviously understood the importance of additional funding because their kids were oftentimes being sent to failing schools, and there is no other option. Even some of the charter schools that were open to try and fix the public school problem, those schools were funded with public school funds and are still failing. So it's a lack of funding that is really critical to a lot of things that we're seeing. But also, those people who have no intentions of ever sending their children to public schools, I was able to have engaging conversations with many, many, many of those people. And they understand that if we aren't educating the people that live all around us, then we're never going to see a downturn in crime. We have a very high crime rate here in Jackson. And we're also not going to see a big uptick in economic development, high wage earning jobs, and different types of job markets coming into the state because we don't have the ability to fuel that workforce with a quality educated populace. So it's an interesting conversation across the board, but most people that I talked to hands down understood that we have to be investing in our children if we're going to improve as a state in any form or fashion.
So if you see that people in your district and probably across the state get that no matter their circumstances, people who are in private school and public school, what's the challenge in the legislature to get that done?
Sure. The challenge is that the leadership for the past several election cycles or several legislative sessions, they've been opposed to fully funding our schools. And the emphasis has been more on banking money in our state's rainy day fund, which now has, I think, $50 million in it, instead of putting money into schools. They've also focused more on big business. because of our, in part, I think our campaign finance laws are very, very lax. And so if you look at a lot of those large campaign contributors, those are big business that are contributing to the Republican leadership over and over. And so the bills that are being passed and the money that's being spent is being spent in those areas. And education has taken a back seat. And that is, we really have to reprioritize how we're going to spend our money if we're going to see a shift in funding our schools and moving our state forward.
And, you know, when we started this, you talked about having a four-year-old. I have a 3- and 5-year-old. Yep. Both of them, well, one of them is in public school. One of them will be soon once he is old enough for kindergarten. Do you think that your perspective as a parent of a young child is something that's missing in the Capitol as well?
I don't know the answer to that because I don't know how many of the men there now have young children.
Well, how about the perspective of having more moms in the legislature? Because, like you said, there is a lack of representation for women, not just in Mississippi, but in most states in the country.
Yeah, so there are 122 House of Representatives seats here in Mississippi, and there are less than a dozen held by women, even though we make up approximately 50% of the population here in Mississippi. So just, you know, the stats alone are sort of staggering and show the underrepresentation of women. I don't see a downside to having additional women in the legislature, especially working professional moms who understand how to prioritize and how to get things done and are able to make a decision rather quickly without making a bad decision out of haste.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important because a lot of times there is a lot of just ruminating and, well, let's do a study about it or let's talk about it and let's table it, and no actual decision is ever made at the end of the day. So I'm hopeful that I can bring some of that to the table and try and get some things pushed forward and expedited in that way.
Yeah, there is only one state in the country that has majority female legislature. And that's new.
Yeah, and that's Arizona, right?
No, close. It's Nevada.
Nevada, okay.
They both have an A at the end. So, but, I mean, I talked with a representative or assemblywoman from there, Sarah Peters, and it makes such a difference, like, the shift in perception and in priorities, right? Like, this isn't going to happen, unfortunately, anytime soon, but if Mississippi had a majority female legislature, not majority Democrat, though that might help too, but just if it had closer to a majority female, even, what do you think the change would be to having significantly more women represented, especially moms?
I think that the session would be much shorter. I think that we would see an introduction of fewer bills. I think Mississippi right now has a legislature that is at the very top of the rankings when you look at the number of bills submitted each session. And a lot of that, it seems to just be puffery. There's mm-hmm. this weird competition almost among many of the men there that, well, if I haven't sponsored, you know, enough bills or submitted enough bills, then it doesn't look like I'm doing anything. But at the end of the day, I think that most working professional women, especially working professional mothers, realize that, you know, substance is much more important than quantity. We don't have time to just sort of, you know, submit things on a whim just because we'd like to see a big stack of paper. So I think that would be a huge shift, quite honestly.
So you're saying that the men may be more concerned about the size of their legislation and not about how they're using it?
That is definitely the perception if you look at the last several sessions, yes. People will even submit bills that have been submitted every previous year, and they may have even been passed in a previous year, and they just don't pay attention to know, and so they just resubmit stuff. It's silly and a waste of time.
Well, someone may be looking at you and thinking, oh, it's a waste of time that she even ran. I don't think this, of course, but she's going to be a minority Democrat in the legislature, so yeah, she's got all these ideas. What is she going to do? What would you tell somebody as you prepare to do the work?
Yeah, I mean, you have to start at some point.
Right.
If we just throw our hands up and say, oh, well, there's a Republican supermajority, we might as well not even run, then things will certainly never change. But there has to be a starting point, and I'm okay being part of that starting point, to just sort of go and make relationships with some of these Republicans who I know professionally, but I don't know politically. So I'm hoping that my first year or two, I can really sort of solidify these relationships, because a lot of what happens at the legislature is based on relationships. If I can go and talk to the Speaker of the House, who is Republican, obviously, who I also happen to have practiced law with for 7 years previously, we work in the same firm, and have a conversation with him that another Democrat might not be able to do because he doesn't know them or respect them or to think that they're intelligent, whatever the case may be. So I think working towards those relationships and just working towards moving the needle, we have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. You can't win a majority for either women or for Democrats in the next election if you're not trying the election before.
Right.
So are you also hoping to change the perception both of what the legislature can do by changing the dialogue, the perception of getting more women in office, perception of Democrats? Is that something that you think you may have on your shoulders that others may not?
Potentially. If you just look at my district in general, it was for years considered to be sort of a Republican stronghold. So even having a Democrat win in that seat, much less a woman win in that seat, is kind of a big deal. And so people have asked me, well, how did you get, you know, the number of crossover votes that you got? How did you convince Republicans to vote for you? And at the end of the day, it came down to just knocking on doors and letting these people see me. You know, I'm a mom just like they are. I live in the same type of neighborhood they live in. Our kids go to school. We're in junior league together, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I'm not some demonized, you know, liberal that has horns growing out of their head. That there were no weird attack ads or things like that, which really surprised me in my race. But I think it is just simply because I was able to get out and talk to people, and they're like, yeah, we do need to spend money on education. Yeah, we do need to spend money to invest in our infrastructure. Yeah, expanding healthcare sounds like a good idea. I don't know why we're not doing it. And so these were just things that sort of once even very Republican people talked to me or listened, they were able to make these agreements and say, okay, well, yeah, I can vote for you. It doesn't matter if you have a D behind your name on the ballot. And I think we have to do more of that, especially in local elections in the South, because the Republican leadership tends to try and lump all Democrats in any level with the farthest of the left national Democrats. And so if we can get out in front of that and sort of change the narrative and make people see us as people, then it makes it much harder, I think, for the Republican leadership to continue to do that election cycle after election cycle after election cycle.
Yeah, if you're only going to win the Mississippi legislature the same way we would win in Pennsylvania or in any other state, but just district by district, right? So
yeah,
you really need to recruit candidates and get people to kind of understand that. So that brings up the most important point of this is that you want other people to run for office. And what would you want to tell people who may be considering running for office, especially, 2020 is coming up in just a few weeks.
Right.
We're finally into the 20s, so we're bringing back, it might be the roaring 20s in a different way. why should we encourage more people to run for office, and how can we do that?
Yeah, another thing that I would say is, along those same lines, is we need more people to run for office who are not career politicians. We need fresh ideas, fresh perspectives from small business owners, from working mothers, from, you know, people who are actively engaged in the community in a way that I think a lot of career politicians seem to lose touch with. And so step outside of your comfort zone and just do it. I have likened it several times over the last several months to just jumping off of a cliff. It was a leap of faith, and we didn't know how it would turn out at the end of the day. We knew we being my husband and I, that we would give it 110% because we don't ever do anything, sort of halfway. That's not who we are. We're very competitive in nature. And so we knew that we'd be able to live with ourselves, whatever the results were, win or lose. And I think that people pick up on that. So if you're just really committed to what you're doing, that comes across when you're talking to people at the doors. If you're just kind of half-heartedly doing it, I think that people definitely read into that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking about running, I would say jump into it, but be all in. If you jump into it and just sort of, stick your toes in and you're not willing to really dive in, I think it's going to be a waste of your time and just probably not a great experience for you at the end of the day.
And I'm sure you had, a cadre of people kind of boosting you up, right? Because when you're on a campaign, you got down days and up days when you're just tired, which is just human. Thankfully, it sounds like you have a great husband. We probably need more husbands to lift up wives to do this and neighbors and friends are just helping out, especially with encouraging women, because you had to be called a few times, which seems to be a theme where women are often asked 10 times before they agree to run, and men are asked, like, midway through the ask, they're like, yeah, I'll do it.
Right.
So what can we do as people to encourage other good candidates? Because there's a lot of good potential candidates out there who are just like, they need that nudge. What do you think would be a good way to help encourage and support them?
Yeah, so go to them early, not 2 weeks before the qualifying deadline, and just say, I think that you would be great at doing this for, reasons X, Y, and Z. I've talked to other constituents that live in your district or whatever the division may be. And, we all agree you have a built-in support system. If you agree to run, like, we're going to be here. For me, the hardest part was volunteer recruitment. So if I had gone into this knowing that I had a group of, like, 5 or 10 people who were just really going to also invest some of their time and both organize volunteers and get that done, it would have made saying yes much easier. So I think that there are things that we can do to make it easier for the candidates or potential candidates to say yes, but it takes some planning on the front end, and it also, there are some national groups that I've realized are great at doing this. Every district is one, Sister District is another, Future Now is another. All three of these groups really helped quite a bit in my race, and they look at these districts in a mathematical standpoint initially. And I think if we could do that more locally and figure out how to read the numbers and say, okay, this district is definitely winnable, like mathematically on paper it makes sense, that would also encourage some candidates to say yes. Because a lot of times you say yes and you have no idea, well, what is my win number? Is it even possible? Am I wasting my time? What's the likelihood of being able to flip this seat or, unseat an incumbent? So the more information that you can provide to somebody that you're trying to recruit the earlier on, the better, in my opinion.
Perfect. I totally agree. I've been really excited about Sister District. That's something that my friend from Mississippi actually recommended because she lives in New York and was making calls for other districts. And then there's the Emerge program, which is terrific across the country.
Yes.
And Run for Something. I really like what they're doing, encouraging candidates. So, just a minute or so left. 2020's coming up. You're not running for president, I assume. What are you most looking forward to in Mississippi in the next year?
Mike Espy has announced that he is going to run for Congress again against Cindy Hyde-Smith. And Mike was incredibly helpful in my race. He was paying attention to 2019 candidates, even though he knew he was going to make a bid for 2020 at the national level. And he was still, I could call him at any point during my campaign and ask his advice. He actually came out and knocked doors with me at one point for several hours on a Saturday. He obviously made a financial contribution to my campaign. He did a robo call reporting that we sent out to targeted areas within my district. So I'm really excited about following his race and seeing if we can pull out a win for him in Mississippi.
Especially Cindy Hyde-Smith was just in the news this week for...
She's always in the news.
Not in good ways. And Mississippi has right. but being in the news for calling for against gun control while there's a school shooting is just terrible timing at the very least.
It is incredibly ill-timed at a minimum,
yeah.
So I lived through a school shooting here in 1999.
Oh, what school was that?
Go ahead.
What school was that?
Pearl High School, here in Mississippi in 1999. So it was pre-Columbine. Really, I guess the first school shooting that sort of garnered some national attention. So having lived through that, my views on gun control are obviously different than Cindy Hyde Smith's in that vein. But also, I'm married to a military veteran. We own guns. I'm not, against the Second Amendment in that respect. But I think that there are more people like me who understand the need for sort of common sense gun reform, so that we can handle and deal with a lot of these school shootings and mass shootings that we're seeing, weekly at this point. They're happening. And I just think that if we were willing to address that at a state level, it would go a long way. But I don't know what the appetite for that is in Mississippi. It is still a very red state with, lots of guns and lots of people who like to hunt and that sort of thing, which is great. But I don't think we need gun shows where you can walk in off the street and buy a gun faster than, you can get a new credit card, or you can buy a car, or it takes longer to do almost anything than going to a gun show and just buying any gun that you want right off the counter. So that is something that frustrates me.
Well, I'm sorry for anyone has to go through that. I was in college when that happened, but I distinctly remember Columbine. Because I remember where I was watching it on TV in my little dorm room, and I remember that there were a string of shootings that year, and it was like the news story wasn't just about Columbine; it was about what's going on in high schools.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're still in that.
It's a gun issue. It's a mental health issue. There are a lot of factors that are not adequately addressed, and. As a mother who, since my 4-year-old came home last year as a 3-year-old and told me that, they had to practice what to do if a bad guy comes to their school. And that is just, it's gut-wrenching for a mother. And then also, having lived through that several years ago at this point, obviously. But it's just, we haven't done anything to improve that environment for our children. And it's a scary, scary place that we live in when you send your kid to school knowing that they're really not safe there at any given moment.
Yeah, my son's in kindergarten this year, and he went through the drills. They explained to them that it was not, they'd said it in a way that shouldn't be scary.
Right.
But we were listening to NPR in the car the other day, yesterday when the news was on, and he said, "Oh, who got shot? It must have been adults who got shot, because kids don't fight in wars." And I was just like, I don't know what to say here. I turned on the music instead, because it's just so hard to talk about.
It is. It's incredibly hard to talk about, and especially on a level that they will understand without being terrified. My 4-year-old, last year when he came home, he was like, "Well, if a bad guy breaks in, I am just going to... kick them really hard." And I'm like, no, you're not. Like, that's really sweet that you want to protect your teacher and your friends, but like, you just need to do exactly what your teacher tells you to do. Whatever you might think, you're not actually a superhero. So just seeing that he didn't really grasp the severity of it was on one hand terrifying, and then on the other hand also relieved. I was relieved. I was like, okay, he doesn't really know yet, like, all the bad things that are in this world, and I'm glad, because he's 3, and I don't want him to know those things yet.
Right. Well, to wrap this all up, I think you're a superhero for taking on this challenge and running for office in Mississippi. We need more superheroes who are willing to take on those challenges, because there's a lot of villains that need to be taken out, I guess you could say. They may not be Lex Luthor like Superman taken out, but they're all... we need as many heroes as possible. So thank you, Shonda, for running for office, for sharing your story. before I finish here, is there a best way for people to follow you and see what you're going to do next?
Sure. So all of my social media for my campaign and now my, you know, tenure in the legislature, it's at Yates for House. You can find me there on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If somebody is thinking about running and they have some very specific questions they'd like to ask me, I'm more than happy to answer any of those. My email address as of now is info@yatesforhouse64.com. I will at some point have, you know, a new email once I've been sworn in and all of that, and I'll be happy to share that on my social media site once I have all of that information as well.
Well, great. Well, follow Shonda Yates on social media. Follow what she's going to do in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Follow what she's going to do in Mississippi. And maybe you will be inspired and run for office, too, wherever you are in the country. Thank you so much, Shonda, for what you've done and for sharing your story today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed talking with you.